Interception. Over the next 2 weeks, Oscar wrote Sage three letters. Footnote 100. He didn't want to risk calling and have Mr. Cleverer answer the phone, dropping them into the mailbox before he headed to the shop in the mornings. He didn't hear back from her. In the first letter, he apologized and said he'd been wrong about the whole thing. In the second letter, he insisted he'd been right about everything, but apologized again for the way he'd sprung it all on her. In the third, he told her he was a bigger jerk than Gregory Fairmountain and Tim Clint combined. His days fell into a colorless routine. June faded into July. He was worried that he would never carve again. He tried to. Sage had given him those beautiful new tools for his birthday, but when he held them in his hands, he found his fingers frozen and unwilling to cooperate. He stopped carrying the monk wood around in his pocket. What was the point? All he had time for was the apprenticeship, eating, and sleeping. It rained for 14 days straight without a reprieve, which even in the alley was something of an unusual occurrence. He wrote a fourth letter. It contained only two lines. Don't you want to know either way? And Sunday, dawn, bleak beach. He dropped it in the mailbox on Thursday morning. It would be picked up in a few hours and would hopefully reach her by Saturday, which would give her some time to think about it. On Saturday evening, he filled a backpack with some things he thought he might need. He went to bed early. I'll be gone in the morning, he told Bilious before he went upstairs. Some kids from school are getting together to hang out. As long as you're at the shop by noon, Bilious replied, not looking up from his mug of tea. Yeah, Dad, Oscar said. I'll be there. He rose from his bed at 5 o'clock the next morning, strangely awake and alert, and he brushed his teeth and grabbed an apple from the fruit bowl before pushing out into the retroclining rain. Footnote 101 about retroclining. This type of rain is quite rare and seems to fall upward rather than downward. But this is, of course, impossible, I think. The bus didn't run until 6, so he walked to Bleak Beach. He was a ball of energy and nerves. He made himself eat the apple, even though he didn't feel the slightest bit hungry, and he paused at the entrance of Piteous Park to hand the apple core to a stray dog that had trotted up to him with hopeful eyes. Hey, buddy, Oscar said. The dog's fur was matted and wet, and it swallowed the apple core whole. Wish I had something else for you. He left the dog and continued onward. The retrocline had slid into a sluice, footnote 102, which, if you don't remember, is a particularly cold type of rain. And Oscar turned up his collar and shoved his hands into his pocket, trying to keep warm. The beach was empty when he arrived, except for one lone car pulled to the side of the road. Oscar's stomach gave a little flop as he recognized the shiny new jet-black paint job on the big and fancy vehicle that sat with its engine idling before him. For one second, he had the wild thought that Sage had stolen her father's car. But nope, because as Oscar froze, just across the way from the sandy start of the beach, the driver's door of the car opened and Mr. Cleverer got out, smoothed his shirt and suit jacket, gave Oscar a little nod, and waited for him to cross the street. Which Oscar did, despite everything in his entire body telling him to run. Oscar realized, as he crossed the street, a few things in quick succession. One, how had he expected Sage to get from her house to Bleak Beach on a Saturday morning before any buses were running? Two, he probably should have put a different return address on the four letters he'd sent to her house because clearly Mr. Cleverer had read them all and Sage probably hadn't even seen a single one. Three, Mr. Cleverer was smiling, but there was something about his smile that was a little too big, a little too happy. It made Oscar's stomach hurt, but he crossed the street. He had no other choice. Even if he took off running. Well, Mr. Cleverer had a car, so Oscar wouldn't get far. He stopped a few feet from Mr. Cleverer and tried his best to sound as casual as possible as he said, "Good morning, sir." "Good morning, Oscar," Mr. Cleverer said. He was holding an umbrella, and Oscar couldn't help but notice that it was a Braun model, one of the bigger ones. It sold for 4 skiffs at this one, and this one was already pulling apart at the seams. Oscar tried not to stare at it. He tried not to stare at the ground either, which was his next choice. He tried to act natural, but he felt a rising desire to burst into tears. "I assume you know what brings me to the Black Beach so early on a Sunday morning." Oscar didn't know what to say to that. To say no would be lying. To say yes would be admitting fault. He settled for a noncommittal shrug. Mr. Cleverer nodded. He looked off into the distance, out past Bleak Beach, past the choppy waters. It was too cloudy today. Gray Lighthouse wasn't even visible. "How are you planning on getting there?" Mr. Cleverer asked. "The boatyard," Oscar said in a small voice that was almost carried away by the wind. He pointed down the beach a little, and Mr. Cleverer turned to see the small, abandoned cemetery of boats, all fairly small, some with holes in their bottoms, some with oars, some without, others with barnacles and slimy sea mold clinging to their hulls. "Oscar," Mr. Cleverer said, "I cannot stress to you how dangerous that would have been." He looked serious now, turning back toward Oscar, crouching a little so they were on the same level. "Those boats haven't been used in years. The gray sea is unpredictable and fierce. Professional sailors died in these waters all the time, often enough that they closed entire ports to spare any more loss of life. And you wanted to bring my daughter on one of those? I don't think I need to express to you how even the strongest of swimmers would hardly stand a chance if their boat capsized 100 feet from shore. What would have happened to you, Oscar? What would have happened to Sage?" Oscar couldn't speak. A large lump was forming in his throat, a thick blockage that was making it hard to breathe. Mr. Cleverer seemed really scared now, not at all angry, just earnestly, earnestly scared, and his eyes were wide as he stared at Oscar, waiting for him to respond. "I would have picked a good boat," Oscar said, and even as he said it, realized how weak of a plan it was, how little he'd thought this through. What did he know about boats, anyway? Absolutely nothing. Less than nothing. He'd never even been on a boat. He would have gotten them both killed. Mr. Cleverer closed his eyes. He rubbed his hands over his face and straightened up. He was back to looking angry. "Oscar, I don't know why you were in my office or what you think you saw there, but I assure you, you are completely off base. If you don't know what I saw in your office, how do you know I'm off base?" Oscar said, and he knew it was the wrong thing to say the moment it left his mouth. Mr. Cleverer leaned in, his face so close to Oscar's that Oscar could smell the coffee he'd had that morning. "I like you, Oscar," Mr. Cleverer said, his voice soft and low. "I've always liked you, and Sage likes you, and that's why I'm going to give you one more chance. Now I assure you, you are completely off base. Don't you agree?" Oscar saw no other way out of the situation. He nodded. "I think you're right, Mr. Cleverer," he said. Mr. Cleverer straightened up. His mouth melted into an easy smile, his eyes brightening. He looked completely normal again, completely happy. "Perfect," he said. "Can I give you a ride back to the alley, son?" "No, no," Oscar replied quickly. "That's okay, thanks. I can walk." "Suit yourself. I never could stand a sluice. Cold as hell." Mr. Cleverer turned back to his car, then stopped himself and patted the breast pocket of his jacket. He pulled out an envelope and handed it to Oscar. "Almost forgot. Sage wanted me to give this to you. Feel free to send a reply back by post. You'll forgive me if I read it first, though." Mr. Cleverer winked, slid into the driver's seat of his fancy black car, and pulled away from the curb. He was gone in another minute, and Oscar shivered, a full-body convulsion that felt like the release of a long, painful breath. The letter was getting wet, so he shoved it in his pocket and started back toward Dove. A better plan. Oscar could barely feel the ground beneath his feet. He could barely feel the rain against his skin. He was soaking wet by the time he walked into Chateau Buckle. Bilius was wearing his flannel robe and stoking a fire in the stone fireplace. When he saw Oscar, he tutted loudly. An entire world of umbrellas at his fingertips, and the boy is always wet, he muttered. Are you already done with your friends? We rescheduled, Oscar said, his teeth chattering, although he didn't feel the least bit cold. He didn't feel the least bit anything. Go upstairs and change. Go upstairs and change, then. You're making me cold, Billy said, shooing him off. Oscar kicked off his shoes and went upstairs to the bathroom. He shed his layers of soaking wet clothes and hopped into the shower. The warm water gradually brought back feeling to his skin, and he stayed under the spray for a long while. After the shower, he changed into warm pajamas and went downstairs to sit in front of the fire. Bilious was reading the Sunday newspaper at the kitchen table, nursing a mug of coffee. Oscar had Sage's letter in his hand. He was scared to read it. Obviously, Mr. Cleverer had read it. He had made it clear that Sage and Oscar wouldn't be allowed to communicate without his direct supervision. With slightly shaking fingers, Oscar opened the letter. This is what it said. Dearest Oscar, we were so happy you came to spend your birthday with us. Need to say sorry that it took me so long to respond to your letters. A lot has been happening, and I've been so busy. Better late than never, though, right? Plan as I might to sit down and respond sooner. It just didn't happen. Come back to Roan Piers whenever you want. Next time I'm definitely going to beat you in burgeoning bloom rackers. Saturday or Sunday usually works for me. Morning or afternoon. Whenever. East of here we can go visit a cool park I like. Mark my words, 10 skiffs says you love it. Don't be a stranger. Tell you what, next time you write, I promise I'll respond sooner. Anyone else who needs me will just have to wait. Yours, Sage. By the time he finished the letter, Oscar's heart was pounding so hard he thought it might jump out of his chest. It seemed like a normal letter, right? Anyone who'd read it would think it was perfectly normal, a perfectly normal letter. But Oscar knew better. Because Sage had said, dearest, Oscar jumped up from the hearth of the fireplace and ran to the kitchen table, where Bilious kept a pen to do the newspaper's mess word. Footnote 103. This is a sort of like a mashup between a crossword, a word seek, and Scrabble. Puzzle. Oscar snatched it up and ran back to the fire. Then he circled the first word of every sentence of the letter. When Sage and Oscar had first built for Cleverbuckle, when Sage and Oscar had first built for Cleverbuckle, they decided that any good fort needed a foolproof code for sending secret messages back and forth. But how will you know when a letter is just a letter and when it's a secret code? Oscar had asked. We'll start any coded letters with the word dearest, Sage had responded. It was easy to remember because neither of us says dearest, so we'll know right away that the letter has a secret message. The code itself followed this simple rule. The first word of every sentence of the letter was pulled out to reveal the secret message. Each paragraph made up a complete sentence, which meant that Sage's secret message was, we need a better plan. Come next Saturday morning, East Mark 10. Don't tell anyone. East Mark 10. Obviously, that was East Market at 10 a.m. And even though Mr. Cleverer had read this letter, he wouldn't have been able to decipher the secret message. Brilliant! Oscar exclaimed. What now? Bilious asked, only half paying attention. Oh, nothing. Sorry, Dad, Oscar said. He had to write Sage at once to let her know he'd gotten her message. He hopped up again and found a clean piece of paper, then sat back down. This is what he wrote. Dearest Sage, I got your letter and no worries about the late reply. Will you let me know if the first weekend in September works for a visit? Be ready for me to beat you in burgeoning bloom rackers. There is no way you'll win. Yours, Oscar. Footnote 104. I'll leave you to decipher this one yourself. Oscar read the letter over, then nodded to himself and folded it up. He found a blank envelope, addressed it to Sage, put a stamp on it, and headed downstairs to drop it in the Dove's mailbox. Now all he had to do was wait a week. Frederica's collection. It was impossible for Oscar to concentrate on anything while he waited for a secret visit with Sage, which resulted in the following mishaps. On Monday, he burned dinner so badly they had to throw the entire thing out and go back to East Market for something else to eat. On Tuesday, he put a canvas for a wib umbrella when he was supposed to be cutting a canvas for a spillin'. On Wednesday, he spilled an entire mug of hot coffee on the kitchen table. On Thursday, he put his shoes on the wrong feet and didn't notice until halfway through the day. Footnote 105. When he had already developed some pretty impressive blisters. And on Friday, he was so jittery that he kept dropping Bilious's tools over and over until finally, Bilious dismissed him altogether and sent him over to the factories to pick up a new roll of canvas. "You're like a bull in a china shop," Bilious complained loudly after narrowly escaping impalement from a pair of scissors Oscar threw across the room. "Sorry," Oscar said, and he really was sorry. Of course, because he hadn't meant to launch the scissors at his father. "It's fine, it's fine. I've been meaning to send you to the factories anyway. It'll be good for you to run an errand and get the lay of the land." Footnote 106. But Oscar didn't really want to get the lay of the land when he came to the factories because they had always creeped him out. Just being near them made his throat itchy from all the smoke and his skin sweaty. The air always seemed to be 5 degrees warmer over there. Oscar had ridden past the factories on the bus plenty of times, but he'd never actually gotten off at the stop before. Bilious found a scrap piece of paper and drew Oscar a quick map outlining the 6 factories and which one Oscar was meant to visit. He labeled each building with the letter A through F. Bilious had drawn one of them, C, significantly larger than the others. Oscar stared at it. That must be Braun Industries. All the other factories were leased and used by multiple companies. Braun Industries was the only one that owned an entire building just to themselves. "There will be a loading dock here," Bilious said, pointing to Building D with the tip of his pencil. Oscar tried hard to pay attention.
You'll ask for Frederica. Introduce yourself and she'll get you what you need. Got it?"
"Got it," Oscar mumbled.
"See you in a couple hours," Bilious said. "And for goodness sakes, Oscar, try not to throw any sharp objects at the bus driver, okay?"
Oscar cracked a smile at that.
"I'll try," he said.
"No promises."
By good fortune, Oscar arrived at the bus stop just as the bus was pulling up, and he waved a hello to the driver as he took a seat near the middle of the vehicle. He studied Bilious's map, then put it in his pocket. Now that he thought about it, he was actually happy for the distraction this errand provided. As it was, he could hardly sit still. He kept bouncing up and down in the bus seat, but at least he was out in the world and not trapped in the umbrella shop where time sometimes seemed to slow down so much as to stop entirely. This was much better. There was a little breeze coming through the cracked open windows, and it wasn't even raining that hard. The bus meandered. Footnote 107. The bus driver never seemed to be in that big of a hurry, driving slowly and sometimes taking quite random wrong turns, doubling back and eventually continuing on again. Its way around the toe, stopping at Bleak Beach, where a few people shuffled off and on, then swinging back around to the west side and heading north to the factories. When they reached the factory stop, Oscar filed off with a half dozen other people. Within a minute, his throat had become scratchy and his skin had become clammy and warm. In front of him, the factories spat their foul smoke into the air, darkening the sky above and all around him. Workers hustled and bustled, coming to and from lunch breaks and clocking in and out of shifts. There was so much energy and movement that Oscar felt a little overwhelmed, and once he'd passed buildings A and B, he took a moment to stop and get his bearings. Building C was right in front of him. The enormous doors were thrown open, and a sign above them confirmed what Oscar had guessed, because there, in massive letters, were the words Braun Industries. The building was wider and taller than any other factory, and the smoke that gushed from its smokestacks seemed to be even blacker, even thicker, even fouler. Oscar couldn't tear his eyes away from it. How was this sort of rampant pollution even legal? He started walking again, keeping to the right of Building C, just like Bilius had instructed. Beyond Building C were Building D and E, and past those, Building F. Oscar made his way around the left side of the Building D and found the loading dock, which was buzzing with activity. There were a few trucks being loaded with large, heavy boxes, assembly lines spitting out more boxes from the belly of the building, and people everywhere who moved like bees in a hive in a perfectly coordinated dance that seemed to make sense to them, but just felt a bit like a chaos to Oscar. Eventually, he became aware of a tall, striking white woman in an ankle-length gray skirt, gray button-up linen blouse, and gray linen vest. Her hair was fixed into a severe bun, and she held a clipboard as she moved throughout the crowd. She had to be Frederica, so Oscar waited until she was free and hesitantly approached her. "Yes?" she asked, sensing his presence, but not taking her eyes off her clipboard. She was writing so quickly that her fingers were a mere blur of motion. "Are you Frederica?" Oscar asked. "Yes, how can I help you?" She spoke abruptly, quickly, sharply, and she still hadn't looked up at Oscar. "Spit it out, please. I haven't got all day." "I'm Bilius's son." Frederica's eyes snapped up and she instantly softened, dropping the clipboard to her waist as she looked Oscar up and down. "My stars," she said kindly. "Why didn't you say so? You're the spinning image. A dear, dear friend of mine, Bilius is. Come right this way. I have what you need." Frederica turned on her heel and led Oscar through a door to the right of the loading dock. The hallway he found himself in was lit and weak overhead fluorescent lights. One of them flickered in a distracting way. The light they cast made Oscar's skin look yellow. At the end of the hallway, Frederica turned right, then left. Then she removed a large key ring from her pocket and unlocked a door with a plaque on it that read, "Frederica Rollins, Shipping Supervisor." She pushed in the room, flicked on an overhead light, and stepped aside to make room for Oscar. His eyes widened as he walked into the office. Every inch of wall space was taken up by massive glass aquariums, which held fish of every size, shape, and color. Oscar couldn't help it. He literally gasped. Frederica chuckled. "That's what most people do when they see it for the first time," he said. The lights played across the water, sending curvy, squiggly lines of luminescence across the floor and ceiling. It felt like he was underwater. "I always wanted to be a marine biologist," Frederica said. "Life had other plans, but still, I've managed to assemble this little collection over the years." Oscar walked over to the one tank that was about 5 feet long and taller than he was. It was absolutely filled with small, brightly colored fish, every color of the rainbow. He thought of Petra and her oscillatorscope. She would love this. Many of these fish came from the gray sea. Frederica continued, before it became so polluted as to be completely uninhabitable. These fish lived in the gray sea? But they're so beautiful, Oscar said. These are some of the last of their kind, Frederica said. Pollution has wiped out entire species. Look over here. Oscar walked to the other side of the room, where Frederica was standing in front of a series of smaller tanks. Each one held two fish, one red, one yellow. These are called Stopentia, she said. Each pair is a couple. They mate for life, you see, and they don't like to be around any other fish. They get quite feisty, completely extinct in the wild. I'm hoping they'll have babies. The babies come out a vivid green. Then, as they mature, they pick a gender and turn red if female and yellow if male. Wow, Oscar said. He moved to the next aquarium, which was the biggest in the room and took up the entire back wall. I think fish are the most beautiful creatures, Frederica said. The way they glide through the water, they're uncomplicated. Lives, their simple beauty. My favorite thing in the world used to be walking in the underwater tunnel to Gray Lighthouse, being completely surrounded by marine life outside the glass walls.
Oscar was transfixed by a tiny octopus that had just crawled out from underneath a rock. But he turned now, intrigued by what Frederica had just said. Underwater tunnel? It's been closed for years now, unfortunately, Frederica said nothing. Not that you would see much anymore. The water is too cloudy. The fish are all gone. Sorry, can I just... An underwater tunnel? He repeated. Like a tunnel? But it's underwater? Frederica laughed. Have you never heard of it? No, I suppose it's before your time. Bilius would have been to it, I'm sure. It led right from Bleak Beach to Grey Lighthouse, quite the tourist destination back then. And is it still there? Well, it must be, but like I said, it's been closed for years. Right, right, Oscar said carefully, keeping his voice light, deciding to lie just a tiny bit. I think I've heard of it, actually. The entrance was near the boatyard, right? No, on the other side entirely, Frederica said. In the basement of the old aquarium, of course. Oh, yeah, Oscar said. That's right. I think my dad has mentioned it. And I'm sure he'll be wanting you back soon. I've taken up way too much of your time. I just get so excited when someone is interested in my fish. Frederica said, smiling. But here you are. One fresh new roll of canvas for your father, charged to his account with his usual discount. Frederica removed a roll of canvas from behind her desk and handed it to Oscar. It was heavy but manageable, and at that particular moment, Oscar could barely feel its weight, because there was an underground tunnel that led directly to the lighthouse. He wouldn't have to risk his life navigating a dilapidated rowboat across the gray sea. Dilapidated, footnote 108. It's not ideal for a boat to fall apart unless your goal is ending up in the bottom of the seafloor with the fish Frederica loved so much. Just wait until he told Sage.